Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And I'm sitting in a bunch of X-Wing crap because this episode started as I was in the middle of Anyway, it's one of the trials of being a semi-miniatures gamer is the organizing and reorganizing. I guess the same with the card gamers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, there's a new pack out. Great. Now I got to resleeve these, redo decks.
Yeah. Or just like keep them organized inside the box. Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, first world problems.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. All I need now is one of those, you know, your 30 cents a day. Hey, you know that money you just spent on those card sleeves?
Right.
That could feed a child. Or that could buy all of this vitamin A for these kids.
Right. Yeah.
And you just turn off the TV.
Pretty much.
And start shuffling your X-Wing crap.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not really news, but it looks like they are shipping out or people are receiving their special edition Dungeons & Dragons sets.
Yeah.
The ones that are in the wooden boxes, the anniversary editions.
Those look so sexy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, don't get me wrong. The box looks nice. I don't really care. Because A, it's D&D, which I'm pretty much over. And B, like, aren't the books that are inside this nice wooden box just, like, letter-sized paper folded in half?
It's about the box. It's got that big, and dragon shaped like an and from the Dungeons and Dragon, the old TSR logo.
Right.
That's what it's all about. The box is sexy. I don't care about the paper inside.
If it's all about the box, then why not just sell the box?
I would be perfectly happy with that, actually.
You know? So.
Would you be $100 happy to?
No.
I know it's supposed to retail for $150, but I think people are selling it for $100.
Yeah. No, especially if you put on the international shipping on top of it.
Mm. Right.
Well, but I understand it's the perceived value thing, and if you price it too low, then people will assume it's crappy, even though it's probably made from, like, press board or whatever. But $150 for that...
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I want it, but I wouldn't spend that much money for it.
So what you're going to do is knock someone over and steal it.
Exactly.
Okay. You heard it here first.
So I'm a collector, but I do appreciate it when games move on. So, and I'm saying this knowing that I'm paying probably a little bit of markup for a game because all the ships look like they're from Star Wars.
Yeah.
But would you be playing if they didn't?
Probably not, because I wouldn't have heard of it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then you, when they release a new set, and you're like, oh, I really need to get these ships I've never heard of before. And they'll say, this one's the bomber. And I'm like, how do you bomb in space? Doesn't it just like kind of like float there? You're like, release the hatch. All right.
This is the floater.
All right, why don't you push it? Push it and hopefully the acceleration and the ship's gone anyway. All right. We really need to get into an atmosphere.
Wow. You know, I've known about the TIE bomber for most of my life and I'd never actually thought of that before.
Yeah. You think about that scene where they're dropping bombs on the asteroid and you're like, hold up.
Wait a minute.
How did that work?
Yeah. The thing is, when you watch that, you don't think of that.
No,
and that's
you
the
don't.
Difference between a good movie and a bad movie. Well,
exactly.
There's a lot of differences between a good movie and a bad movie.
Very
one of them is like, you don't go, well, hold on. Why don't
what? Ice doesn't float up or ice doesn't float down.
Yeah, I mean when a movie is setting up its premise and you're going what?
Mm.
Then that's a problem. So this is the latest installment in Creature Feature, and for people unfamiliar with Creature Features, what we do is we take a creature and we look at them in myths and legends and fiction. Then we look at them as playing them as antagonists and playing them as protagonists in a game.
Right.
And today's is Mummy. And like all our creature features, we really put in the time to in the research. So in addition to looking up Wikipedia and Googling things, we also sat down and watched a movie called...
Get it right.
Isis Rising?
I think so.
Isis Rising, The Curse of the Lady Mummy.
That's it. Yeah.
Oh, you wrote that down?
It was burned into a...
Exactly. Burned into my... Oh.
And right. Like when Lyle says we put in the effort to research, we really put in the effort. Oh my lord.
And people can find that movie on YouTube.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, we put in the time, but we didn't put in the money.
Neither did they. Jeez.
I question whether they put in the time.
Not to keep bagging on that movie. Didn't really see what it had to do with mummies.
ISIS?
Wait, obviously, yes. You can say that there was a mummy, but you need air quotes around it.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
I think that movie was terrible? Okay, whatever. I think it was a classic mummy movie. I'm not saying it was a good movie or a good mummy movie, but it followed a lot of the themes that we're going to talk about today. Egypt. Mm-hmm. the idea of a love that was there. Revenge.
Okay.
All right.
I mentioned Egypt, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So eventually you're saying, yeah, there are a lot of themes there, like Egypt, and so many more. You know, whenever you see a product where they say, and many more, it means you've obviously run out of things to say.
Reincarnation?
All right.
Oh, okay. So what they've done, instead of having somebody wrapped up in bandages, what they've decided to cast a stripper to be ISIS.
Right. Mm. And I believe she's wearing body paint for most of the thing.
She's wearing a bikini.
No, because a bikini does not jiggle like that.
Wayne knows. But I agree. I think it was a body paint costume.
So it would definitely be a low-budget movie, and it perhaps was even a student film at one point.
Hmm.
That would actually elevate it a bit, in my opinion, if it was like a student film.
So when you're reading about just the myths and legends, or even the fiction of mummies, what were some of the themes that stood out for you? Of course, I've mentioned three of them. ISIS.
Well, actually, you've mentioned many more as well, with the words many more. No, but actually, I do agree.
Strippers.
Exactly, body paint. No, but I do agree that I think one of the biggest ones that stood out was revenge. And that often took the form of the mummy's curse, which I'm sure most people have heard of before. Though I also go with a bit more, when I say classic mummy, I do envision kind of the traditional, maybe classic mummy movie look, where the wrapped bandages, the decomposing corpse, shambling kind of thing.
Well, the thing that kind of excited me about doing the episode was that, of course, everybody thinks Egypt when you mention mummies, because that's the kind of the quintessential mummy, right? Mm-hmm. But many other cultures actually had mummies as well. Perhaps not as advanced as what Egypt had, or as frequent, but I don't know, I just think it's interesting that more than one culture had this.
Yeah, so. And actually, you know, you bring that up, that's still a process that we humans still do till this day.
Yeah, that the guy who did the plasticized bodies.
Yep. Plastination. Kind of Lenin in Russia is a mummy, and he's not ancient history by any means. And I saw an argument online, I don't know if I quite buy it, but saying that cryogenics is a form of mummification. Yeah, it's one of those maybe kind of thing. But
I mean, well, that's different. Maybe we need to back up a little bit and just point out certain things about mummification. One thing that was interesting from the research is the clear distinction between accidental mummification,
mm-hmm.
so which may lead us to believe that mummification was more widespread than it really is, and
right.
True mummification.
Yeah, the fancy words were anthropogenic and spontaneous.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
basically, you know, mummification
is spontaneous fancier than accidental?
No. The anthropogenic is pretty.
Well,
fancy.
That was fancy. That's a $5 word.
But. All right. So I got five of my $10. All right.
You have $6.
Ooh.
No, mummification can occur in any kind of environment where it's anaerobic. There's no oxygen in there, or it's too cold, or it's too dry. So bacteria can't decompose the body from within.
Right.
So that happens in places like on the tops of mountains or underneath glaciers, inside peat bogs where there's no oxygen, or in the sands of the desert in the case of Egypt.
Yeah, in the case of the peat bog mummies, it was like the bodies didn't really become desiccated. They kind of turned into like a weird leather.
Mm-hmm.
So like all their internal organs are preserved, and, you know, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah, and there was kind of a gradient along where you can cut it off between the spontaneous and the anthropomorphic mummies. I think I was reading that the Incans, they would sacrifice children by carrying them to the top of the mountain, where it's cold and dry enough that they would mummify naturally, but it's kind of a forced, spontaneous mummification. And then you have all the way to the Egyptians, you know, where they do this month-long process to make sure that the body dries and mummifies properly.
Right.
Yeah, 40 days that took, I
think.
Well,
40 days just for the drying, but there's still a few more steps before and after that.
Yeah. It was a pretty involved process.
Mm.
Right. So. And I think the Egyptians, when they, like a lot of things, start accidentally.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
So they noticed that they were, or spontaneously.
Yeah, here's your dollar for that word.
And then they developed more of a ritual surrounding it. And of course, that ritual was tied to, you know, the afterlife and, mm-hmm. and preserving things for the afterlife as much as they could. Yeah, you're going to need this. Yeah. Except, well, you need the heart, so they kept the heart inside.
Mm.
But then the other organs, they don't need as much, so I guess they were preserving things around the heart.
Yeah, everything but the heart, the brain, and the kidneys.
But that was quite clever, like figuring out, and I'm sure through a lot of trial and error, is taking out stuff helps to preserve the mummies and makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like
and
they
then how to get the brain out, and I think people experiment with how to get the brain out.
Right.
And they've actually tried to mummify bodies in the Egyptian style. And I believe they succeeded, and they figured out what you do is you need to liquefy the brain.
Right, right.
And then allow gravity to take its course, as opposed to yanking the brain out.
Yeah, you know, that was something that I remember reading about when I was a little kid, just how they would stick something up the nose and then just stir it around until the brain was all like a pudding.
Yeah, the thing I read, it was like they used like a hook to pull the brain out piece by piece from the nose. And I remember reading that as a kid. And yeah, now you come to find out that they actually, you know, because of all like the CAT scans and imaging techniques we can use, they found like an organic, they didn't really say what material, but they found an organic rod in the brain cavity of a mummy. And now they figure out, okay, well, they probably used some stick, as Chris said, to like stir up the brain until it was liquefied and then drain it out a hole in the nose. Because to the ancient Egyptians, well, the brain wasn't important because the heart was the where everything of the body resided. So
Which makes sense.
And perhaps a little late to make this disclaimer, but this is probably not the episode you want to listen to during a meal.
Good point.
we're all done with them, like hollowing out the cavity and, you know,
putting in 11 herbs and spices. 11th was secret.
Did you guys read about how they hollowed out the cavity for poor people?
No.
The budget mummification?
What'd they do, just like take a giant spoon and scoop them out?
Well, no, worse than that. Well, okay.
Worse than that? Jeez. All right.
For rich people, of course, they would carefully make these incisions that would be really difficult to see, and you know, they'd carefully take out each organ one by one.
Hmm.
But apparently for poor people, they would just inject oil into the body and inflate it with oil. And then they would plug up all of the orifices and let it sit for about a week. And then a week later, they would unplug the orifices, hang it upside down, and all the organs which had liquefied by then in the oil would just drain out.
Oh, that is disgusting.
Isn't it, though?
Well, that's... Ugh. Yeah, never mind. Wow. That seems like a giant waste of oil.
Well, I suppose, yeah. But, I mean, it's not like they're still... it's not like they're losing money. I'm sure they're still getting paid for that.
Well, yeah, they're still getting paid for it, but it's just like, what do you do with all that oil? You just let it...
Maybe use it on the next mummy.
Oh, jeez.
So they're already dead, man.
Yeah, they're already dead, but imagine what that oil would be like. Ugh.
Imagine any of this.
Actually.
All right, fair point.
I think they've probably developed some sort of technique to remove your... sense of smell.
Yeah, right.
If you were going to be one of these priests. I mean, they let it sit. Maybe it doesn't smell that bad, but...
No, it does. During the drying, they had to have guards there to guard against scavengers coming. Couldn't have smelled that good.
Well, all right. I imagine the rich people are rather dry, you know, but poor people? Yeah, what's that giant bag of oil? Oh, those are just the next mummies. Yeah.
Right.
That's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that's the mummification process. and people are very much aware, like Chris said about the mummy's curse, or like Wayne was talking about like rituals that they have, or Chris was talking like even the Incas. And that, you know, of course, there's the rituals that are involved in that, and also the treasures.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is, as I learned, they would put little amulets in between the layers of linen.
Right.
Yeah, I read that too. And that was one of the reasons that so many mummies were destroyed, is because people were unwrapping them to get at those treasures.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also the, you know, the stories about how, you know, mummies became such a curiosity in, like, Victorian England that people were just bringing back mummies and, you know, unwrapping them just for the novelty of unwrapping something,
yeah.
Or just, like, using them as fuel for steam locomotives, or the brown pigment, like, mummia, I think it's called, was actually originally made from grinding up mummies.
Yeah, that's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
And you were talking about mummy confectionery, the honey.
Yeah, kind of similar to what Chris said about filling a cadaver with oil. I'm not exactly sure how truthful this is, but I read a report of, I think it was in China, they would, when a person was getting ready to die, sometimes they could kind of donate their body, and they would consume nothing but honey until they died of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would take their body and put it in a giant stone cask full of honey, seal it for 100 years, and the body would essentially kind of melt, and you would have this concoction that, much like snake oil, was said to cure all ills.
Oh, that's horrible.
Hey, it's no filling the body full of oil and then letting all the organs drain out, but...
Oh, it's not the body dissolving that bothers me, it's other people eating it. Sorry, cannibalism just doesn't... Yeah, that's not...
Ew. Yeah, but it's not meat, it's honey. It's honey.
It's got people in it. It's made of people!
No, I find when people buy and eat placenta, like placenta capsules, I'm like, I'm guessing it's animal placenta.
I have not been able to... Because I see that on... Side note, I see that here on TV all the time, you know, and I've not been able to determine, but I assume it is...
There is a placenta. Drug that's not actual placenta. I forget what it's for, but the name is placenta.
Yeah, yeah. That I'm wondering if it's just like bad Japanese naming, or if it actually is what it says.
That is truly an unfortunately named product.
I know.
Yeah.
Well.
But you're not. If they said like eating parts of a dead body would cure cancer or cure baldness or make your skin look younger, we would eat it.
Mm.
Those cannibalism taboos would drop. Like you wouldn't believe.
It's true. It's true.
Just thinking how to transition back to mummies after that. I guess getting back to what you said about the amulets, Lyle, the other thing that, well, not struck me, but one of the other things I thought was interesting about mummies is for all of the, let me bust out my $5 word here, for all of the anthropogenic mummies, they're all based around religious ritual. Like, of course, the Egyptians believed in the afterlife, and we kind of, you know they preserved the body because it wasn't somehow important for safe, not safe passage through the afterlife, but it was somehow promoted, I don't know, a happy life in the afterlife. But
well, no, it was necessary. Remember, we did the episode on Ma'at.
Yeah, I was trying to remember.
Yeah, and it was you needed. Jesus, sorry, I don't remember that well myself, but you needed to have magic in order to progress in the afterlife, because there were certain trials or gates or something that you had to pass.
Right.
And the amulets were magical in nature, and they would help you learn and gain these spells so that you could progress forward in the afterlife. And
right.
I think that's where a lot of kind of the powers of the mummies, or the curse of the mummies, where they came from, because the people who made them believed that the people who are dead now, they would be gaining power. They would be learning magic and things like that. So the mummy is as kind of, not the physical body, but the spirit of the mummy is magically a very powerful creature in the minds of the Egyptians.
Right. Well, I was kind of extending that out to all cultures who mummified their dead. And just the act of mummifying a corpse is a rather involved process, even if it doesn't take 40 days like it did in ancient Egypt. And you're not going to do that as a culture unless preservation of the body is important. And I think, like any culture who does that, this thing is going to be a ritual and have a lot of significance.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of by their nature, whether they have those amulets or not, mummies are not magical, but have a lot of religious significance. You know, and you can extend that to any culture.
Well, you know, I differ in a little bit in that some of the more modern mummies have been made for other purposes than religious. But you're definitely right that in the ancient world it was all about religion.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think about, you know, modern mummies.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of to the side of what you're saying.
True.
If we borrow from fiction, you can see some other ways to, or some other reasons for the mummification, and that is as a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And they mummify a person alive. Now, have they found the body that was deliberately mummified that they thought that person was alive? I'm not sure if they can determine that.
Well, I think the peat bog bodies,
right,
some
right.
of those were murders / sacrifices. They're thrown into the bog.
Right. I don't know if they were. I think they were sacrificed because scientists can determine that they were at least killed and then, you know, while they were still alive, obviously, because the preservation process actually preserved their internal organs to the point where we can open up their stomach and see what their last meal was.
Right.
Don't know if those were punishment. I think the majority of those were ritual sacrifice. So again, getting back to the kind of religious importance of this.
And that one kind of gets away because it's not fully anthropomorphic mummification. It's more just taking advantage of a natural process. But one thing that I want to say is that that's a point that I pulled out of it as well when I was looking at this, that the mummies are important. You know, if for all of these cultures that did the mummification process, specifically Egypt, it takes a long time and a lot of effort of lots of people and often a lot of money to do. So it's not just a dead body. It's an important dead body.
Right.
You know?
And I think that brings up something that we haven't mentioned yet, and that is the tomb, of course, if it's a bog or something like that, then I think that says how much they value that particular mummy. But when you go to a culture like Egypt and they build fairly elaborate tombs for these people, that then shows that, the significance that it played in the society, as well as the significance it can play in your games.
Yeah.
What's a mummy without a mummy's tomb?
Right. Or I guess you could extend that to, even if it's not necessarily a tomb, if you're talking about something like the peat bog mummies, where the area where you're going to find the mummy is still important. Like, I don't think that the peat bog sacrifices were just cast into any hole in the ground. You know, there probably was a reason that they were cast into that area. So I think kind of regardless of...
Because there were bogs there?
Well, yeah. But I mean, I don't think it was...
I was trying to think it's not the same thing gently.
Funny. But I don't think it was just that, well, there's another hole in the ground, you know, kick somebody in it. So I was trying to say, regardless of what the type of mummy, the area probably should be significant.
Yeah, I don't know too much about peat bogs, actually. And I was a little bit surprised about the bog bodies or the bog mummies. So, like, how common they are in a particular area, whether or not they say, okay, this particular peat bog is going to be our mummy bog.
I honestly don't know.
The other ones are
going
to be used for...
refuse, yeah.
I don't know.
From what I read, I don't actually know if the people who used them for sacrifice knew that they would mummify bodies. I think that it may have just been a place where bodies sink slowly, so it looks kind of cool and thus is good for sacrifice.
Or they might not even have known that. It might just been like, well, there's water, you know, throw them in and drown them. I was just kind of thinking more of the, you know, horrible cliche of, oh, sacrifice, you know, the person to the volcano, you know. Why? Because that's the special volcano, you know. It doesn't really matter if we can see them or not, or
and now they're back.
But if you have two volcanoes in the area, I think you'd sacrifice the both.
Yeah, probably.
I think it's like you sacrifice to the volcano because it is the volcano.
Right, right.
So it'd be like, oh, I don't mind angering that one because it's a bit tinier. but we better take it. I heard that there was a volcano in Antarctica that when it erupts, out comes gold. Not just only gold, I would imagine, but gold is in it.
Hmm.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with mummies. But
no,
I just
it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Not at all.
Yeah. trying to link that to somehow about, like, you know, Antarctica somehow, you know, erupted. Nope, nothing. But
it could lead into something interesting, not related to mummies again, but you're sacrificing bodies, putting them in this place, and then gold comes out, but it's really their gold filling. And they don't see the cycle.
What happens when they stop burying people without gold fillings?
Yeah, it's like, now it's silver. What, did we run out of gold? What is this? And,
oh my god, now it's just teeth! Ah!
It's resin. Like, yeah, it gets, as people get healthier, it's like, nothing. Sorry. I just came up with that.
Yep, I could tell.
White Wolf's Mummy the Curse was one of the resources that we used for this episode, and I thought they raised some pretty interesting themes. They introduced the idea of memory.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to talk too much about the mechanics of Mummy the Curse because we might end up coming back to this and reviewing the actual book for people. And like any White Wolf game, they like to introduce a lot of terms that
sound cool.
Sound cool and make sense once you look into it, but not really great for just dropping them and moving on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, one of the mechanics they introduce is memory, and that you wake up and you have no memory. But that also ties back into something that's visited a lot in mummy fiction, is the idea of past lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Reincarnation. And like even the classic Universal Studios movie and the remake that they did with Brendan Fraser, where the person is a reincarnation of somebody else. So when the mummy comes up, he sees a woman and thinks she looks like his past lover. Mm-hmm. So he's obsessed with her. And then she starts to remember that, yeah, I did have that past life. Mm-hmm. So that is really intriguing to visit in a mummy story. And I like the way Mummy the Curse plays with that by... you wake up with really no memory, and that stat goes up, but you wake up really powerful, and that stat goes down as the longer you're in the world, which is kind of a flipping things on their head there, where normally you start fairly low-powered and you increase in power, whereas a mummy's like, no, I wake up, I'm really, really powerful, but I'm only going to be awake for so long.
Right. Yeah. No, you're talking about that theme made me think of one of the other ones we discussed, revenge. And I don't know how accurate this is, but I read that some of the earliest examples of mummies in fiction were written by anonymous or pseudonym at the time, but then turns out to be female authors. And there's some speculation as to the... I guess the idea of the mummy taking revenge was almost kind of not like a rape revenge story, but kind of like, I'm really butchering this point, but the idea of not the author's feeling of powerlessness, but you look at the themes of these stories and it's somebody taking revenge kind of because I guess the female character can't.
That's really cool. Do you know, is there any veracity to it? Because that's awesome.
I honestly don't know. I'd have to do more research into that.
Huh. I don't think it matters.
No. Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, if you're going to use it in the game, no. But
because, I mean, there's certainly enough to, not evidence if it's not true, but there's certainly enough that you could link to it. A lot of mummy stories deal with getting back either their body parts or the amulets or their treasures.
Right.
So if you look at rape, something is
taken.
It's taken away. Term, yeah. In a sense, I know it's not a perfect analogy or a metaphor, but certainly that would work in a literary sense, is that getting back the power or getting back what I used to have. And in a mummy story, they would literally get it back as well as doing horrible things to the person that took it. Mm. And yeah, that is revenge, but it is also that added element of when a mummy wakes, often they don't wake up whole. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think plays an important part in a story that you would write. Because there's a lot of different revenge stories that you can tell.
Yeah, it's romantic too. The only organ the mummy wakes up with is their heart.
Aww.
And then he goes and kills people to get his other organs back. Oh, it's so romantic.
Give me my liver.
Don't know why I thought of this. He's kind of like the reverse Tin Man from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, in a sense, hey.
So, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was thinking of the Iron Giant.
Okay.
Where, you know, he gets his parts come together.
Right. Hmm. Yeah. That was actually an okay movie.
I love the Iron Giant.
It's a great movie. Yeah. One of the things that I was looking at for the mummy was the Egyptian rite, what was it called? The ceremony of the mouth, which was right before they sealed the mummy in the tomb. They a priest dressed up as Anubis would come by and use different sacred objects and touch different parts of the body. Like the eyes would grant them the ability to see in the afterlife, the mouth would grant them the ability to taste, throat would be speech, things like that.
Hmm.
And I thought that would be a really interesting way of kind of playing this character. Maybe you start out without a lot of your basic abilities or senses. But, you know, as you, in this kind of the same grain where you can go and you can find your organs, but this way you could also add things to it. Like now you're able to speak after a while. I suppose it'd be really difficult to have in a game because you'd be playing a character that's blind, deaf, mute, and, you know, without any abilities at all.
Right.
So you couldn't really start from zero, but I don't know, maybe maybe the ability to speak clearly as opposed to like a harsh whisper or something. Almost like you're, by doing this ceremony in reverse, you could kind of become human again or something along those lines.
We see elements of that in the mummy, the Brendan Fraser mummy.
That's right, yeah. Cause he,
and he takes them from people.
Yeah. So that's right. He takes the eyes from one of his followers.
Or people he just catches in a room. Guy I didn't realize was a follower.
Yeah. That's
right.
They sacrificed to him and he grew skin and tissue from that. That's right.
I really, really like that movie.
I do too. It's actually my wife's favorite movie.
Oh, that's good taste.
Well, I was thinking that would kind of set us up to move over to mummies and as antagonists, because taking the eyes from someone, follower or not, or stripping the skin off someone just to get it back sounds pretty gruesome.
And yeah, I was thinking very, kind of the, you know, the protagonist role for that. But you're right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, okay, the protagonist, morally gray, perhaps.
No, sorry, but I meant like regaining the ability to see, speak, talk, etc.
Oh, and then
because you'd be playing the character. But no, you're right.
Excuse me, good sir. May I borrow your
an antagonistic
eyes?
Thing.
Yeah. Oh, I will just take them.
It could be a somewhat sympathetic antagonist in the sense. I mean, certainly it's horrific and gruesome what they're doing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that. That karma that's involved, where they generally take it on people that have wronged them, either by disturbing their tomb.
Okay, right.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're just, I mean, why don't they have them? You know, something happened and they don't have these body parts and they could be just lashing out at people.
Right.
But you're still like, well, the person, the mummy's just trying to make themselves whole.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many different angles you could go for that. You could see that if you're playing like an investigative kind of mystery where certain canonic jars are disappearing from museums for that, so it's not too hard to put it together that it's a mummy, so you have to figure out where it is and what it's
okay, doing. Sorry, I was thinking, that's not much of a mystery.
Yeah.
Who keeps taking these mummy parts?
Yeah.
It's a collector.
Now, no, if you wanted to broaden that out, then just do like the organ thief kind of thing, you know?
And mm-hmm. That's where I was going with it.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. I'll steal your reasonable one, and slightly more mysterious one.
But to set up with the antagonist, I think you have to make a decision: is the mummy like a monster, or is it a reincarnated human? And by that I mean, are they like thinking, feeling? Will we be able to interact with the players, or are they just going to be like a shambling monster that has a Egyptian motif?
Right.
Do you mind if I add a third option to that? There's also like the force of nature thing, because the mummy's curse in itself can be the monster's part of it. For example, King Tutankhamun, the idea of that curse was never that a mummy showed up and killed people, but that horrible accidents befell the people who disturbed his tomb.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I was kind of rolling the force of nature thing into the monster, but I think you made a good case for the mummy is just like an object, and the actual thing you're dealing with is the curse. So I could see the three distinctions there.
Okay. It kind of turns it into more like a ghost story or like that Final Destination horror movie series. But still, I mean, this way at least there is a source to it. Or maybe just bump it up and add in the monster as an additional element to it.
Right. Well, I could see that, yeah.
You know what I read about the curse is that there is some evidence that not in all tombs, but at least one tomb that there was some reference to a curse written on it. But they think it wasn't intended for tomb robbers.
Right.
It was intended for the priests.
Yeah, what I read is there are a couple examples of curses written on the inside of tombs, but they are for the most part just kind of like wards against bad spirits.
As you said, rather than really good.
I think there is one very solid example of a pretty direct curse about, you know, whoever disturbs this tomb is going to have all this bad stuff happen to him. But I think
the one I read was, here it is, as for anybody who shall enter this tomb in his impurity, I shall wring his neck as a bird's.
Yeah, I remember that one. Good. I remember that one too, yeah. But I think the majority of the curses were just, as Lyle said, kind of not directed at tomb robbers, or just kind of to keep the interior of the tomb clean or free of evil spirits. Mm-hmm. Not really all that exciting for a game where you walk in and you're like, hey, this tomb is completely clear of dust and, you know, I'm not registering anything on my ghost meter. So, yeah, those curses are doing their job.
Now, all right, guys, move it out. Let's take all the gold.
Exactly. Yeah. So, a lot more exciting when the curse is something like, I will wring your neck like a chicken. Whatever that is.
Yeah, I think the... What Chris was talking about, the force of nature, the unbelievable coincidences, I think would be good for maybe a session or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, like as Wayne suggested, you need to bring in the monster antagonist or the sophisticated antagonist, something for the players then to deal with. I suppose it could be a little fulfilling to solve the mystery and return the stuff.
Mm.
But I can see players not finding that all that exciting. And totally one of the curses, I think it was in the 50s, I think he was Egyptian, and he figured out that if you couldn't return the mummies back to the tomb, you at least put the family together, something like two child mummies, and put it with the adult mummy, and it solved things.
Mm-hmm.
And then he figured that it's not really great to take them out of the tomb and put them on display, but it's better than people going into the tomb to look at them.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, I guess combining them, which, yeah, I guess it's a nice story, but I don't think it would be that fun to play.
Right.
True.
Put them together, and then, oh, great. That fixed everything.
Hmm. Yeah. No, there was an Adamant Entertainment, like, pulp module that I got, and it was for Savage Worlds, but I could reskin it for something else, and I really enjoyed those modules, and one of them was called, like, it had to deal with mummies, and I forget what it was called exactly, kind of like Curse of the Mummy's Tomb or something. Mm-hmm. And right at the beginning of the module, they say, this is for the Game Master only, and right at the beginning they say, you have to decide whether or not the mummy is real or whether someone is staging this. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting. It kind of made it a bit Scooby-Doo-ish.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's really great to see your players go... Ah, oh, Scooby-Doo. Oh.
No, but I mean, like, it wasn't something like dress up as, you know, one of the characters is dressed up as a mummy. But it was more like, yeah, here is a rational explanation for these murders that happen. And it could be this person doing it to take revenge, or it could actually be the mummy. You know, and I thought that was a kind of a cool thing to do, you know, keep your players guessing. I mean, you did have to decide at the beginning, but that is one way to do it. But again, I don't think you could stretch it out for more than a couple sessions, as you said, Lyle.
Yeah. I was thinking about David Caruso and CSI Miami. He'd be like, hold on. Why is that mummy breathing?
I think this case is all wrapped up.
Yeah. That was pretty good. Yeah.
That'd be 5 minutes into the adventure with Dave Caruso. Just like, oh, you know, I'm like a pathologist and I didn't notice that there's actually a living guy just wrapped up in linen. Stupid. I was going to put in the liver thermometer.
Yeah.
Again, going back to the great movie, The Mummy, the 1998 or 99, because there was a British mummy movie that came out the year before. And no one cares, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
And it in a way is all three of those, and he progresses towards the sophisticated antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's the kind of the force of nature, the evil, and you have the guys warning them to, hey, don't do it, and then they ignore him and do it.
Yeah,
and
they make him sympathetic as well.
I don't remember that, but
in the second one with his love interest.
Oh, what was that?
He had the love interest in the. No, maybe he didn't.
Okay. The second one is not as good a movie, but
all right.
I was trying to think of which number was the one with the Rock and the Scorpion King. And
that is the second one.
Oh, jeez! All right.
Yeah. And then there was three Scorpion Kings.
Yeah. Anyway.
And I didn't know that until today.
And now you wish you hadn't known it, right?
Well, I can forget it tomorrow. My memory, you know, it's like.
No, but you raise a good point, because the mummy does kind of represent all three in the first mummy movie. And even after he kind of becomes the rational thinking, you know, maybe sympathetic antagonist, he does kind of raise that kind of undead army with the wall crawling fast mummies.
That's right.
So you still, it's not like you have to do, you can only have one. You know, I mean, if you're going for that kind of game, well, then you can raise the undead army of lesser mummies and still have that aspect of it as well.
That's something else that I wanted to say. Thank you for reminding me of that. There are lots of possible cohorts that you could add into a mummy. There's not just like the regular cultists who may worship the mummy in the modern
show
day.
Show me the mummy!
I know, I was trying to do that. Yeah, show me the mummy!
Well done.
Says the man who did Wrapped Up. But that was pretty good.
No, I like that. That was sincere. That was a good joke. Where was it? Oh, yeah. So, for example, the mummy may be a pharaoh, so you may have remnants of the ancient Egyptian religion where the pharaoh is a living god. But you could also have ancient other people and creatures with it. There were all the people who were involved in the actual mummification process. They were tasked with guarding the bodies, and who knows, that may have continued after their death because they would be mummified as well. There's all of their pets and servants who were mummified along with them in their tomb. And there's also the priests as well. In the ancient Egyptians, I don't believe all of them, but for some of the kings, when the tomb was sealed, the priests were sealed in with it, as were the architects of the pyramid, because they were the only ones who knew how to get back into it.
No, that's a good point.
They died alongside. So yeah, there's lots and lots of different monsters that you could add along with the mummy.
And don't forget all the ravenous scarab beetles too.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I think you guys raised two excellent points about the mummy. Like, Chris, when you're talking about all the followers and cohorts that they can have, and Mummy the Curse has that, incorporates that idea, and like cults, cults that exist in between the awakenings. So not only the undead followers that can have, but living followers who follow these mummy cults.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the cult of Set, or I'm not saying this is coming from Mummy the Curse, but these are words that we would, or names that we would know, a cult of Osiris or cult of Isis. I mean, just like that movie, but they didn't have a cult. Yeah.
And so the other, not like that movie.
Well, the word Isis.
yeah.
And the other thing is that the mummy, unlike a lot of other antagonists, can actually be different things in the story, and it's still making sense. Like if they're gathering body parts and like you said earlier, Chris, about regaining certain senses, and they, you know, now they can speak, so now they can interact differently with this antagonist.
Right.
You might have a werewolf and you have, or Jekyll and Hyde, and you get maybe two aspects, but with the mummy, you can have three, or you know, even more, I suppose.
Yeah, monster, like, god, what do you want? Human.
Yeah, I think that makes them pretty exciting, and makes them exciting to play. It certainly makes for a good, I'll say, supervillain, or main villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, you even had, it's almost kind of a bit like, almost a bit like a vampire, if you look at the traditional vampire, where they can, like, you know, shapeshift into animals and mist, and they have all these kind of magical powers. But it's already a supernatural creature, so credibility is right out the window. But you always kind of wonder, like, oh, really? Like, this thing can do everything? But with mummies, it kind of makes, not that it makes more sense, because none of it really makes sense, but maybe it is a little bit more plausible.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand what you're saying, and you always have to hesitate when you talk about science fiction or fantasy and supernatural. But maybe not plausible, but justifiable.
Okay, that's a better word, yeah.
And just with the vampires, there's nothing to say that you can't play a vampire that is an absolute savage monster until it drinks blood, and then he calms down and becomes a more sophisticated. And I think they do play with that a little bit in the fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times they try to stick to the one. It's like, okay, this is going to be a monster vampire.
Mm.
And it'll always be like that. So you do that, was it 30 Days of Night?
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And, or you look at Dracula. Or even like further, you've got like Anne Rice-style vampires. And they just stick to that, and that's what they are. And maybe there is some sort of evolution or progression, but of course it's over centuries in the way they interact with people. But with the Mummy, I mean, and again, I know I'm bringing this up a lot, but Mummy the Curse, where they have a time limit to do something.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a shorter story and have that quicker evolution and have those different aspects play out in a shorter game. So, yeah. And people would understand that. It's like, okay, it woke up for a reason. It's got some sort of mission. It right. could be love. It could be revenge. It could be just to assemble things. And now it changes as things progress.
Right. I guess that kind of gets into playing mummies as protagonists, because while we were kind of gearing up to do this episode, I was wondering if you could ever play a mummy as a protagonist and not have your story be a revenge story. Because, as you said, the mummies are woken up for a reason, or something disturbs them, and very often, at least in literature and fiction, that is revenge. So I was wondering if could you do anything else playing as a mummy, as a protagonist?
I think that a lot of that is to deal with just undead in general. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of bad reason why they're still here.
Mm-hmm.
And you've even got, like, what are they called? Revenants?
Okay.
Yep. Which are essentially revenge zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And once they achieve that, they'll, I think they have a true death. But I didn't.
I think there's all, well, yeah. If you look into folklore, I'm sure there's things that do that. But then, you know, with D&D entering, you know, popular culture, there's all kinds of undead, and they all do different things. And
yeah.
Yeah. So I think, saying.
I think, yeah, there's definitely a connection there with just them being undead, and people want to do that. But I think if you broaden it out and look at a purpose, mm-hmm. I mean, and yeah, it's a great seg into the protagonist, because you could have some pretty noble purposes. So they could be some sort of guardians, and we not necessarily mummies, but you know the like the hero. I think King Arthur is supposed to come back if
right, right.
England or Britain is ever truly in peril, that he'll come back to life and mm-hmm. and protect it. And those kind of legends where the mummy could be that as well. It's just like, not only do we imagine that, you know, when Arthur dies, they're like, all right, now let's mummify him, because he's going to mm-hmm. come and protect Britain.
Right.
And he does. You know, the Battle of Britain, and Arthur comes back, Arthur the mummy, and, I don't know, flies a Spitfire or something. Okay, really, I probably shouldn't have finished that thought. But I think you know where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it kind of gets into what Chris said at the beginning of, like, is cryogenics a form of mummification? And, you know, that would kind of be we haven't talked about science fiction all that much, but that would be some other kind of body preservation. That would be a way to do a mummy in like a science fiction style game of, yeah, kind of that hero legend of this person is going to come back for a purpose to do something.
You could probably have a lot of fun with that with maybe not cryogenics, because, you know, once they're out of the cryogenic chamber, they melt or thaw.
Well, we're talking about mummies, because once they step out of the sarcophagus, you know, they're all brittle and can't move. So I think we can suspend our disbelief.
But you're right. Sorry, I was kind of going away from the supernatural thing. But if you were doing something sci-fi where like a lot of parts of the body were replaced with robotics or nanotechnology or something like that, in that the body would be able to animate itself even without the brain controlling it, you could have something akin to a mummy there, like an artificial intelligence mummy. Or, you know, maybe the brain is still waking up from whatever kind of stasis it was in, so slowly coming back. Well, that'd be more in the antagonist way than a protagonist, but still.
Well, you raising up that question made me think, like, okay, real-life mummies had this big religious significance, and I tend to attach that to mummies in fiction. So if you're talking about, you know, someone coming back to either for a purpose, either like a noble purpose, then, and I think there's kind of a big part of spirituality has to be part of that. So I was wondering if like the robot body that you suggested, Chris, would it kind of still count as a mummy if it didn't have the religious or at least some kind of spiritual aspect to it?
I suppose it's all on how you define the mummy. You know, if the spirituality is part of an important part of what a mummy is to you, then maybe that wouldn't work. Or you could attach something similar to it with like out of Warhammer 40,000, where there is the idea of a machine god and there's tech priests who sing litanies while they install the robotics. Or it could be just a very involved installation process that is, you know, maybe as deep or as important as a religious ceremony, despite not being so.
Well, you bring up Warhammer 40,000 made me think of the Space Marine Dreadnoughts, because that essentially is a sarcophagus with a robot built around it, and the person inside is dead, but not.
Hmm. That's a really good point.
So if you did something like that, I think you would have a robotic mummy or more of a mummy as opposed to just kind of a robot.
So that's actually a really good example, because they often, or in between battles, they're just sort of not turned off, but in a holding pattern or some sort of stasis.
Right, right.
And it's very lonely, and they can start to forget or go insane.
Mm, mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And when they're revived to go into battle, that can be where they recover a bit. And that follows kind of the idea of what we've been talking about with the mummy, is like they forget a lot of stuff and then they start to regain their memory.
Right.
And that can be intriguing because you're creating a history.
Hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, because I think that's important, is like, if you're not going to do the past lives, then do the long memory.
Hmm.
What they can do. So
that would be fun if you played some kind of like robotic soldier or something like that had lost your memory and you can only regain it. Well, I suppose that is the idea of Mummy the Cursed, huh?
Right. Well, no, actually both of those have to do with memory, if you think about it, kind of like the lost love, because it's not like, if you're doing the mummy, well, then that's not actually, or maybe it is the person reborn, but the fact is you remember your life with this person, and if you don't do that, well, then the lost memories, you're still talking about memory. So I think memory is pretty much the core of what the mummy, at least as a protagonist, is about.
Or at least some kind of past life thing where you're trying to regain or reclaim some of the past.
Hmm.
Maybe even if it's as simple as a MacGuffin as your old organs.
I remember where I put them.
It could be the brain in the jar. I think Kurt Tuma Dracula had a doctor son. He wasn't that old, but they put him in took out his brain and put it in a jar. Nope, not going with that.
Right. I was just trying to think. Yeah, yeah. Did they liquefy it first and then just like tip it up into a jar?
Well, obviously, instead of the heart being the thing that has to stay intact, it's the brain, and that would go into more of the cryogenic or the dreadnought style of mummy. That's the one thing that needs to stay is keeping the brain alive, because once you get into science fiction, you get more into science, and you have to have, oh, they kept this heart, and you're like, well, yeah, we can put the heart in anything, and it's not gonna, oh, wait a minute, what? You know, if you have, like, the transplants.
Right.
Of course, this is gonna make people not want to sign organ donor cards, but, you know, their parts are now implanted in all these people.
Yeah.
But then they all come together, they all have a part, and this is really going a little bit off topic with the mummy, but the group is all united because they all have parts of this one person.
And then they all form Human Voltron!
Yeah. Form of... well, he's just a guy.
Form of larger person.
No, it would be like form of horrible and like amorphous flesh blob or something. There was a movie, I forget what it was, some kind of horror movie where exact thing happened. You know, there was some kind of horrible criminal, and after he got killed, his body parts got divided up, and of course they kind of started rebelling, you know, and this one guy had an arm, and it was pretty bad.
Idle Hands?
I forget what it was called. I don't remember.
I think it was revisited or done a few times.
Probably.
I've also seen it where the person dies, and then they bring them back to life, but their soul died.
Hmm.
This is away from that, but it's a Taiwan or Chinese movie called The Eye. Fantastic. Really, really, really good horror movie. I think a woman gets the eyes from a serial killer, and with that she's able to see ghosts and things. It's just, well, it's really good.
Asian ghosts are not nice, so.
Mm, true.
I thought you were going to say something racist. And you're trying to think of how.
What do you got against Asian ghosts, man?
Yeah. Watch out for them, they're Asian ghosts.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of the time limit? Do you think that makes it exciting for the players? Is that. Oh, and actually, I just said players, and it reminded me of another problem, because we keep saying the mummy, the mummy.
Right.
We did talk a little bit about you can have a cult or you can have cohorts or followers, but, I mean, who wants to be a cohort or a follower? I mean, that's something that's faced a lot of games. I know Ars Magica tries to have a way around it where, hey, you can be the sidekick. Or
Yay.
Dark Heresy is like, hey, you can be a sidekick. And we've talked about that, but can you see a situation where you can have multiple mummies? Do they all awaken at the same time? And how would the story need to change to have it, if you have two or three mummy protagonists?
That would be so much fun, because you could have they're different people in a different court, maybe like different hierarchy. So one's a pharaoh from a certain generation, another one is a pharaoh from 100 years later, so there's kind of like a power play between them. One died really young, but was maybe the oldest pharaoh, he's kind of the most powerful, yet also still young at heart, or mind, or whatever.
And they work together in this buddy...
Yeah,
buddy mummy.
Buddy mummy.
Buddy mummy.
No, I could see doing that, or... I think having multiple mummies where, you know, everybody in the group is going to have to play as a mummy... in my opinion, would limit the type of stories you could tell, because there's only going to be so many things, in my opinion, that would cause that many mummies to wake up, or there'd only be so many reasons for them to work together to recover like a couple artifacts or body parts or whatever. So
yeah, memory's a really personal thing too, so it'd be hard for different people to each hunt their own.
Well, and I think that's the limitation, is, okay, you, much like other games, you have to give everyone a reason to go after this one thing, and it might get boring or trite after a while, but I could see it working for, you know, a story or two. But
what if they when they get revived, they don't get revived in this body, but they it's the reincarnation, and it's not that they necessarily take over another body, but something triggers in that person, then starts to remember who they were. And then part of the story is finding the others. And then they need to do something.
That could definitely... I think that...
It's an awakening, but not an awakening in the sense you awaken in a tomb.
Right, right.
But you awaken in another person's body. I know this is, of course, going well away from the idea of the mummy and focusing more on the reincarnation. But it gets into the memories and the time and... You know, maybe this, they do have to preserve the body, I mean, that they're using, because, I mean, they have to respect that body, but they need to complete their tasks. So there's still that sense of, like, you know, I can't do just about anything with this body and commit suicide.
No, that's definitely a way to take it. And yeah, in that case, it would be more like, as you said, the reincarnation, or maybe the idea is you don't get a new body, you get someone else's for a short time, as you said, and so you have to take care of it. That could be interesting.
That idea. Lots of power, but still inside a fragile vessel.
Yeah. Mm. Or you could also do the idea of a jumper. Now that also makes a great antagonist of having a jumper, but you could even be a protagonist, and this touches on Chris's idea with the cults and the cohorts.
Mm.
You actually play multiple people within the story, and the justification is they're all part of the same cult. And you jump from body to body, and you actually play different characters within this story. Again, I'm not sure how you bring in the multiple mummy protagonists, but it allows somebody to play different types of characters within one story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the cult. They understand that their god or their pharaoh or whatever it is going to take them over when in a time of need.
Mm. Kind of like a similar idea to our voodoo episode, where the gods would ride the people.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
I was thinking, like, because correct me if I'm wrong, I think in Ars Magica, where if one person is playing kind of like the powerful wizard, the other people are playing, like, as you said, they're henchmen, but everybody gets a chance to play a wizard and so forth, you know, for a set amount of time. I don't know exactly what, but that could be another way to do it. Like, yeah, if the spirit of the mummy does inhabit, you know, different people at different times, well then, yeah, you're playing cult members, and at you know, you kind of swap around, you know, at different parts in the game, so everybody gets a chance to be kind of the all-powerful mummy for a little bit, and the other people are playing the, you know, the cult followers for that time. So
I like that. It's difficult to do, but you could even make it where they have really set tasks or skill sets, and you have to sort of complete your task within the time.
Right.
Like, I don't think you'd want to be able, you'd be able to do this type of this game often, but when you do, it's like, I've got to achieve my part of the story, because in 1 week's time, you know, Tamahit, or I just blanked on any Egyptian name.
Imhotep,
thank you. Yep. Is going to take over and do his part.
Right.
And you're trying to set it up. I think it would take a lot of coordination. A messier way to do it is just, they're not so specialized, and everybody's just got to do one thing and kind of organize everybody to do one part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And just portray it. And then wherever it picks up in a week's time or so, that's where it picks up.
Right. And I was thinking something else you could do is, I was trying to think of a way to balance things a little bit more, and perhaps, you know, when the mummy takes over the body, they become really inhuman, and they have all this power, but they are very limited in how they can use it, because they can't interact with other mortal people, or, you know, kind of a bit like being like a supernatural creature, right? Like, there's places you can't go and things you can't do. And so, just by the nature of them still being human, the other people would not be the same power level, but would be much more useful, only because there are things they could do that the person currently playing the mummy could not.
Yeah, I definitely agree that a limitation would definitely make it a deeper story.
Thinking the problem there would be, like, you know, when one person is the mummy, you don't want the other people sitting around kind of doing nothing, because the mummy is like a one-man wrecking machine and can take care of everything on themselves by themselves. So,
well, I mean, if you do have that history thing, I mean, they become, I mean, they revive every, what, century or 2 centuries, 3 centuries. So they don't have a lot of skills that the other players could provide. So that could be one thing to balance it. I don't think I like the idea where it changes and trade. There's a trade off. It could even be different parts of the world. So even though mummies, like deliberate mummification, it wasn't everywhere, but you could, you know, you can tweak things where it was everywhere. And, you know, in Russia, then that's going to be this person, this player's time to shine, because the story is going to switch there, and it can just switch instantaneously to their cult, you know, their mummy, and go from there. Yeah.
Maybe you're different mummies. Maybe the idea of the mummy rising is that there's some kind of spirit that can inhabit mummified bodies. You're jumping around the world to different ones. You wake up one day in a museum, the next day inside Lenin's tomb.
Yeah.
I can't get out! I can't get out! Damn, I think we're just going to sit this one out. So as we discussed, mummies certainly provide unique opportunities, but also unique challenges. And I know we're going to talk in another episode and bring it up with somebody else, so maybe not so unique, but unusual opportunities and unusual challenges, but certainly exciting. And we will probably review Mummy the Cursed in a later episode, so that might be something to wait for.
Hopefully not too long.
Yeah, all right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes, or download it through DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. You can plus one us on Google Plus. I think that's how it works. Or you can join up in our forums and talk to us there, which are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. And, of course, always send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. If we borrow from fiction, Sorry. Crumpling some plastic.
Yep, yep. Finish opening up that A-Wing.
Yep, yep, yep. This B-Wing.
Drive through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.